The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Real Life Real Crime is a true crime podcast brought to you by Woody Overton and executive producer Toby Templey.
Remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. You have the right to an attorney prior to, during, and in question. You can't afford one, a court appoint one for you. You understand your rights.
Your crime spree was over, son. Yeah. Thought you had it licked, but Detective Overton made you sure to turn to shit. Get ready, you're gonna do time. Real life, real crime.
Warning, this episode of Real Life Real Crime, the podcast, may contain descriptions of acts of violence or that are of a sexual nature. It should be for people that are 18 years or older. Heed my warning, people. I do not get the facts of these cases off the internet or from some television show. The facts we're retelling you were presented to us by the victims of the crimes or the perpetrators who committed the crimes against the victims. My description of the crime scenes are what I saw with my own two eyes. If you're going to get offended, please turn this podcast off now. Thank you.
Hello, everybody, and I'm Woody Overton, your host of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. And today, I'm going to be telling you an old school story. I think it's going to be two parts, y'all. It's a really, really in-depth, kind of crazy story. And before I get started, I just want to tell everybody thank you. We love you and appreciate each and every one of you. Our numbers are growing phenomenally. And just for Courtney Coco, you better believe it's coming. It's probably sooner than many of you think. And please keep calling in your tips on Miss Barbara Blunt and stay tuned at the end of today's show for some announcements. So with that, we'll get going. And we're going to call this one Mama Said. So in 2005, I was working as a detective for the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office. And I got to give you a little bit of background to set this story up as what was going on during this time. This story actually starts in September of 2005. And on August the 29th, in 2005, Hurricane Katrina hit the U.S. coastline, right? And simply one of the craziest times of my entire law enforcement career. And so just bear with me. I'm going to skip around and give you some background on this, and you'll see why in a few minutes. But when Katrina hit, I remember the day before it hit, Reese Holden and I, you know, was a good buddy of mine at the time, and he was a deputy for the sheriff's office. I had a fishing camp down in Chauvin, Louisiana. So we drove against the traffic because at the time, Katrina was a Cat 5, and it was going to be total devastation, supposed to hit New Orleans. And Chauvin is down south Louisiana in Terrebonne Parish. So I had a fishing camp, and we drove against the traffic. Everybody's evacuating to get out of the way of Katrina. Spent all night boarding up the camp, et cetera, and then came back through the traffic and got ready for the storm. You know, you heard me talk about on the hurricane episode, we always had to be prepared, and all our units were gassed up and everything. And now we're expecting to be a real shit show when Katrina hits. And at the time, it had the bullseye on New Orleans. And so Katrina comes, and we work it. And it was pretty bad, even in our area, and unfortunately for Mississippi, but thank God for New Orleans and us, it actually turned and hit Mississippi directly. It's like New Orleans, I swear y'all, New Orleans has like a protection around it on storms. All these storms in the past 20 years that I know of that I worked in, at the last second, all the ones that were directed in New Orleans, always seemed the last second the storms turned. They never hit New Orleans. And Katrina was an example of that, right? But the problem with it was, didn't matter. The storm itself was bad. Total devastation on the coast, nothing left standing, really bad. Even in Livingston Parish, we had a lot of bad damage and people without power and stuff like that. And New Orleans took a pretty good smack, but nothing in New Orleans couldn't handle. So a lot of people stayed behind and didn't evacuate. And a lot of people back then didn't have the money to evacuate from New Orleans. I mean, a lot of working people and poor people. And New Orleans at the time was world famous for its housing projects. They were just these monument buildings in bad areas. It seemed like nowhere you went in New Orleans could you not go a couple blocks and hit one of the housing projects, like the Desire projects or whatever. And these were bad places. I'm talking about where cops wouldn't go in without other cops for backup. And then even though they had housing authority, police and stuff like that, but when they made it through the storm, right? Everything's great until it wasn't. The next morning is when the levees broke. And that's what caused all of the severe flooding and the deaths. I mean, I think like 1,800 people died from Katrina. And most of that was from the flooding in New Orleans when the levees broke. If you don't know what a levee is, you're outside of Louisiana. City of New Orleans actually sits like in a bowl. It's below sea level. You can stand in Jackson Square and look up on the levee and see the ships passing on the Mississippi River, and they're above you. I mean, that you're literally in a bowl. So the levees are high bank protection from the rivers and the lakes. You got like Pontchartrain. On the backside, you always got the Mississippi River that runs through it. That's why they call it the Crescent City, because the crescent that the river makes through there. But when the levees broke, it was shit. It was game on, bitches. I mean, and I'll tell you some stories about that in a minute. You had all these, probably hundreds of thousands of people who'd stayed behind thinking that they're going to dodge another bullet. And a bunch of them did go to the Superdome at the last second, and the top got blown off the Superdome and stuff like that. But that wasn't the problem. The problem was when the levees broke. And I'm going to tell you right now, there's nothing on this earth that's more powerful than the force of moving water. So the levees break. There's no power in New Orleans. New Orleans flooding. And then people are drowning. People are climbing into their attics because the water's coming up so fast. They get in their attics and they think they're going to be safe. And they actually found bodies in attics with their fingernails torn off. And people are trying to claw a hole through the roof to get out when the water came up so high. And they a bunch of them drowned in their attics. And then there was no response. Governor Blanco was governor at the time. And it just, the shit, they weren't prepared. You had, I don't know how many hundred thousand people stuck in New Orleans in the water, no food, no fresh water, bodies floating in the street. And I'll tell you, it was a horrible time for everybody. And it's the worst time to be in law enforcement. And I can promise you that. So Katrina hits. And when the cries start coming out from New Orleans, all the people drowning and people, I mean, They had people calling the radio station from their cell phones, some of the local AM stations or whatever stayed on the air, and they're begging for help. I'm at such and such address and stuck in my attic and the water's coming up. We're going to drown. Well, guess what? There's nobody to respond to it, right? And this shit, it turns into a war zone. The police precincts getting shot at night when the sun went down, and it just, I mean, shit, it was bad, y'all. So what's happening in Livingston Parish? At that time, Katrina comes through, and the next day when the levees break and all that, and then Willie Grace was the sheriff, and he actually sent our special response team, which I used to be a member of and I got off of because of my career in detectives. But he sent our special response team to New Orleans to help out. And they were actually one of the first groups to put boots on the ground in New Orleans after the levees broke, before the National Guard, I think even the state police. Our guys were down there first and trying to help people, trying to restore some type of semblance of order. Now, it was bad. And I remember one of the guys telling me that they followed NOPD officer, New Orleans Police Department officer, into a jewelry store. Somebody kicked in the door. And they go in, and they don't know this officer, right? And they just happen to enter after he entered, and this dude's loading up on jewelry himself, and they got out of the way. What are you going to do? They have no authority to arrest. It's out of their jurisdiction, et cetera. So it's just a real, real bad time. Now, when they did organize a response, however many days later, they started sending buses down. And then started evacuating everybody from New Orleans because there was nothing there. I mean, everything was underwater. The levees are still broken. I mean, it is literally flooded. Well, our SRT was down there, and we were getting evacuees in all the time. We had shelters that were open in Livingston Parish, and they had to be manned by law enforcement 24 hours a day. And I'm talking about these people didn't have anything, but then once they started sending the buses down there and getting all these people out and taking them all these different shelters all over Louisiana and ultimately Texas and Arkansas and Florida and everywhere else in the world, it was just bad. I mean, where you can put hundreds of thousands of people. So we're working nonstop, and we're working, of course, the aftermath of the hurricane, but then you're working around the clock. You got a command center, different shelters. And you have to guard them. And buses would come intermittently and drop people off. It was a couple of days into the evacuation process, and I was actually working nights as a detective. And I remember getting a phone call, and it was my ex screaming. I'm just like, "You got to get up!" And people are getting robbed and raped, and you know, all this bad stuff's going on. Get up, get up! I'm like, "Whoa, motherfucker! What do you want me to do?" And I'm like, so I get up and I call the radio room and stuff, and they were getting constant calls. And what happened was the rumor mill had run rampant. All these things weren't going on, but people were calling in things, and some of them were, but not as bad as they were making it out to be. Not like the sky was falling, but it was bad enough that Sheriff Willie Graves called the special response team back and put them in Livingston Parish. And it was, I mean, I'm telling you, it was a real shit show. And we'd been working nonstop. I mean, I'd get like maybe 5 or 6 hours of sleep a day, et cetera. So, but it was bad. Now, what happened was they started evacuating people from the convention center and off the bridges and stuff in New Orleans. Well, guess what? A lot of the good people, or 90% of the good people, got out first. And the ones who were looting originally and stuff like that, well, they had to get the hell out at some point too, because there's no more food. But I mean, you go back and look at some of the footage on the shows, and they got people carrying 80-inch televisions and shit like that. What the hell are you going to do stealing television in the middle of the storm? You ain't got any power. I never got that one, right? And cops just watching it go on. But I mean, what can you do? There's no society. It's just mass chaos. But so the people are starting to get out, and then you come to what's left. And the last ones to get out were the worst ones. And I'm talking about the gangs and stuff like that. They wait to the last second. They robbed, they stripped everything that they could carry. And our shelters were full at capacity. But when they heard of the buses coming out, or Willie Graves heard of the buses coming out with all the thugs on it, the last buses coming out, he's like, not going to happen in my parish. And I'll never forget, they had four buses pull up. It was at nighttime at the shelter. And Willie already knew they were coming. So he had the SWAT team, the SRT team there. We were all there. And the bus driver opened the door and these people started getting off. Look, I'm talking about people getting off and would have like five or six Tag Heuers and Rolexes with still with the price tags on each arm. I mean, these are your bad boys, right? And Willie said, uh-uh. And we surrounded the buses, said, get back on. And he told the bus driver, he said, you're going to drive out of my parish. We're going to give you a police escort. And these other buses are going to follow. And if y'all stop for any reason, we're putting y'all in jail. And Willie didn't play. It was just a really, really crazy time. And I remember talking to good people in the shelters. And one guy said he woke up on the second floor of his house that morning after the storm came through. And his wife was in a wheelchair. And he woke up and he puts his feet over the side of the bed and he steps in water. Okay. And he's like, holy shit. And then he's on the second floor of his house. And then he realizes the water's coming up and it's coming up fast. And he's got his wife who's handicapped. And he's like, what the hell am I going to do? I can't get downstairs. It's already flooded. See, it's a bluebird sky day now, y'all. I mean, there's no clouds. It's not raining and shit. He goes and looks out the window and sees massive flooding and the water's coming up fast, fast, fast. And he said, man, I just started praying. I said, God, please help me. We're going to drown. I can't. And he was, I won't say elderly, but I'm probably my age now. I guess he was around 50 or something. And he said he prayed. And he said, Woody, I watched. He's crying when he's telling me this. I watched in literally a dumpster, a trash dumpster was floating. And it floated right to my window. And I was able to pick my wife up and throw her in it. And I got in it. And they used it like a boat to hit dry land. Or they got saved by somebody in a boat or whatever it was. So it's just really, really bad in... We're working around the clock. Everybody's working. You got a time off. And then you got people like deputies like us that didn't even have power yet from the storm. So you're out there doing it, y'all, but just mad chaos. Now, the Army National Guard comes out. The feds come out. And so the guard starts to help provide security at some of these evacuee shelters. And look, this place is full, y'all. School gyms and stuff like that in the parish I'm talking about. And meanwhile, the crime rate is just rolling, but it's not the mass rapes and shit like the rumors that started with when Willie called the SRT back. But we got a severe crime rate, and we didn't get a day off. We were working it nonstop. Well, the problem with that is on September the 18th, which would have been, I don't know, 10 days or so after Katrina made landfall, Rita forms. Okay, Hurricane Rita, and guess what? That bitch has got a bullseye for us also. And so we're watching it as it's coming in. We're getting ready for it, and it's another real humdinger of a storm. So just really, really crazy times, and there's a reason I'm telling you all this. But it just wouldn't stop. Seemed like we couldn't catch a break, right? So on September the 16th, 2005, it was... at nighttime, probably, I don't know, 7 o'clock, something like that. And my pager goes off. And I think I was in the office, like catching a few winks or whatever. And they said, all units respond to Carroll Road and Walker. I say all units, detectives respond to Carroll Road and Walker. We have a police officer that's been stabbed. All right. You don't want to ever get that call. Stabbed or shot. About a fellow brother officer, but it happened. And so,
do you guys know what May 12th is? Sunday, May 12th?
Mama's Day.
That would be correct. It's Mother's Day. So let me ask you, do you basically get your mom the same gift every year for Mother's Day? Maybe some flowers, some chocolates, maybe a robe or a framed photo, right? Boring stuff, right?
Right.
Well, let me tell you about something that's totally cool and different for Mother's Day. That will never wilt, spoil, or put an extra 10 pounds around her waist. I'm talking about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty unique. Cool, right?
Right.
Here's how it works. Every week, mylifeinabook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. Your mom can either type a response to the email, or she can record her voice if she prefers to do that, or she can do both. Cool. And mylifeinabook.com then compiles all of her responses into a beautiful keepsake book, as well as an audiobook. And if you want, and she's up to the task technically, you know, the audiobook is a great extra thing to be able to do. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and your future generations can treasure. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is kind of your chance to give her a way to share them. Every family's a little bit different, and in my family, we love to give each other a really hard time. So I've taken the approach in doing this of asking my mom to comment on some of those family moments that might be a bit embarrassing to other family members. Last week, my question was, Mom, did you feel guilty that day you hit me over the head with your wooden clog and Dad had to take me to the hospital for 8 stitches? Mom's response, back in the day, I was the disciplinarian of the house. And when you were 8 years old, you refused to get out of Nancy's, that's my sister's, plastic kiddie pool. I told you 10 times to get out of the damn pool. You didn't listen, so I chased you around the yard. And when you slipped, I nailed you right on the head. That was the last time you got in that kiddie pool. Of course, Dad had to lie to the ER and tell him that you fell on your head, but I nailed you good. The entire process with My Life in a Book is simple, and in the end, Mom will have a great keepsake that can remain in your family for generations.
Check out mylifeinabook.com and use code RLRC at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com and use code RLRC for 10% off today.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
So I'm rolling out the door and they have Tech 1 1033, which means nobody could talk on it. I'm trying to get information. I wasn't that far off Carroll Road, probably 15 miles or so. And I'm rolling hard. I'm listening to everybody and they're calling and the ambulance. And it turned out it was the assistant chief of police for the town of Walker or the city, whatever they call it. I think it's town. Walter Daisy was his name. And I'd known Walter for years. He got stabbed in the stomach. Okay. So the Acadian, the ambulance is getting there. They're taking him and I roll up and see him. But I got to tell you about Carroll Road. This is what I never really got this. And I'm not ever going to throw shade one way or another. But Carroll Road is off of highway, it's north of Highway 190. Now, Highway 190 runs all the way across Livingston Parish from east to west, from Tangipahoa Parish into East Baton Rouge Parish. It also runs right through the middle of the town of Walker. And Carroll Road, where he got stabbed at, is really remote. And he got stabbed at the bridge on Carroll Road. So when I say remote, I mean there's like some big houses on that road. It's no trailers or whatever. It's big houses, but it's not big neighborhoods. It's like they're spread out. They got like 5 or 6 acres each, and it's a dark, dark ass road, right? I mean, you couldn't find this road if you weren't looking for it, if you didn't know where it was. And so I would roll up on the scene, or as close as I could, and it's black. There's no street lights, and there were like security lights, but whatever you call them, yard lights in some of these bigger homes. But I can see I can't get close to a scene. There's every cop car in the world's there. And Acadian already left Walter to go to the hospital. And so I roll up and Chief Hunter Grimes is on the scene. And you've heard me talk about Hunter before. He's now a criminal investigator with the Louisiana State Police. And good friend of mine. We were on SRT together, and he would end up leaving the Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office and going to Walker City or town, whatever it's called, and becoming getting elected chief of police. And so he was the chief of police. And we got there, several of the texts, and I go up and said, tell me what happened. He said, Walter stopped a white male on this bridge for walking on the road. And he said he got out on him. And he said they got into like a scuffle. The guy pulled away from him. And he said he hit Walter a couple times. And he said then he stabbed him. He said, Woody, he said the knife is still stuck in Walter's stomach. And I said, well, you certainly don't want to remove it, right? Because all this, these different crime scenes and stuff like that, you show up, if you got a victim that's got something that's an object that's impaled in him, you don't touch it. Because that may be where it's stuck in, maybe pinching down an artery. You don't know. And he said, Woody, he said, I was at the football game. He said, Walter was there with me. It was Walker, our high school football game. He said, Walter was there with me. And the next thing I know, 15 minutes later, my pager's going off saying Walter got stabbed. And I'm like, what the hell? You know, and he said, and I get here and he's the knife sticking out of his stomach, you know, and Acadian gets here and they get him off. He said, I got to get to the hospital. Will y'all please? I said, don't worry about it, dude. We're going to work it. And you know, cop getting stabbed, big shit. It's big time. And I did tell Hunter, I said, you need to go up to the hospital and we call for a sketch artist and we'll get a sketch artist up there. And as long as he's awake, and then he said he was awake and he was talking coherently, but he had lost some blood and stuff. I said, get a sketch artist to get, if we can, before he goes into surgery, make him delay it. Got to get a sketch artist to try to get a sketch of who this suspect is. So we have something to work on. If he goes into surgery and he dies, we're screwed. And I said, did he call it in? And he said, no, he didn't call it in. Calling in, y'all, I mean, when Walter, anytime you get out on anybody on a traffic stop or you're stopping somebody that's walking on the road or whatever, you always call your location and say your unit number or your detective number. Say, I'm going to be out on Carroll Road on the bridge with a white male dressed in whatever, right? That way, if sugar turns to shit, your dispatcher knows to call back and check on you in a couple minutes. If let's say he got stabbed and got incapacitated and couldn't reach his radio, couldn't call for help, at least other units know where you are. Walter didn't call it in. He said he didn't call it in. And I said, well, that didn't really add up. Didn't make any sense, right? And here we are on this, what would be if all the cop lights weren't there, dark-ass bridge. And it was kind of a misty, rainy night, but not raining. So Hunter jetted. He went to the hospital. They got a sketch artist and route to the hospital and all that. Well, I'm not worried about that now. Now we're going to start to work the scene. State police showed up. My good friend, Kevin DeBall, we call him Big Country. Well, let me back up. Let me digress. Hunter Grimes is probably my height in maybe 250, 260, I don't know what his weight is, but this dude is a giant, okay? He has lifted weights his entire life. When I tell you, his arms are bigger around than my midsection, and I mean, he's just giant. He goes around, or used to, on this Christian group of strong men to do performance at different places, and it's some of you young lifers are not going to know what this is, but we used to have the yellow pages, the big, thick yellow pages, like thousands of pages, the big phone books. And Hunter could take one of those and rip it in half from pure strength. So he's a monster of a man, but a gentle heart and a great guy. Now, Big Country shows up. He and I go way back. And now, of course, him and Hunter go way back also. But Kevin Duvall, when I first met him, he was working the street and I was working the street, but he was working the street for the state police as a trooper. And he would move up and become a detective for the state police. And so anyway, he shows up and let me tell you why we call him Big Country. And I know y'all heard me call Brandon Ash for Big Country before, because Brandon's like probably 6'6" or something like that. This dude's got to be 6'9". 300 pounds, and he is just massive. And at the time, like me, he had jet black hair. I think he's got a little gray in it like I do now. But Big Country shows up, and I told him everything, et cetera. And so he calls out some of his detectives. Meanwhile, the National Guard sent units, if you will, patrols that were actually working the evacuee centers, all these things, they sent troops out on this manhunt. We were trying to set up a perimeter. What Walter said was the guy stabbed him and then he took off running down the road. Well, if I'd have handled it, if it had been me, and if the fucker would got lucky enough to stab me, and I can see you running away, I'm a busting caps at your ass. If you're going to run, you're going to run for a reason. I'm going to empty my magazine, even if I shoot it straight up in the air, right? Walter didn't fire a shot. But he gave the direction they ran in. So we set up a big perimeter, and the feds were in town. I think we had the U.S. Marshals helicopter with the FLIR system on it, which is a thermal imaging system where you can look down and the body heat glows white, right? So it was huge, massive manhunt. And that's the first order of business. And then Jason Ard came, who's now the sheriff. He was over the SWAT team at the time. They're setting up a perimeter, directing searches, et cetera. As detectives, we started going house to house. And these houses were a little bit spread out. I'm sure it's not now, but it's how it was back then. We're knocking on every door. We're leaving no stone unturned. And we talked to every single neighbor on the street. And that, look, there's no cars coming down the street, but if they were, we stopped them and we asked them, did they see anything? Did you see anything? The BOLO has been put out, to be on the lookout for, has been put out for a white male, approximately 40 years old, long, dark hair and facial hair. And that's pretty much all that Walter, skinny, maybe, I don't know, 5'10", something like that. That's what the description Walter was able to give before he went to the hospital. So we're stopping everybody, talking to everybody, hit every single house, talk to everybody. I mean, we just work it. And it's a crime scene. And you know, it's got to be worked. And now Hunter called me and he said, hey, bro, he said, we got the sketch artist before they took him in for surgery. He said, I think I got a pretty good sketch. I said, cool. I said, man, this time it's past 10 o'clock at night. So it may have been a little bit later when he got stabbed. So in Louisiana, the news channels in Baton Rouge area, they run, they used to back then. Now Fox runs one at 9 p.m., but they run it at 10. I said, there's nothing. We can't get it to the news tonight. Let's just sit tight with it. We're still working the scene. We got a manhunt going on. And look, we hunted all night long. Nothing more serious than somebody trying to kill a police officer. All right, so we had the sketch. Hunter stayed for the surgery. We worked the scene all night. And then, I don't know, about 4 o'clock in the morning, Walter had come out of surgery, and they say he's going to live. And then they had to take the knife out of him, fix up whatever. He's in ICU. So once we had done all the detective stuff we could on the scene, going door to door, stopping vehicles, processing the crime scene. I think we even sent it in for prints and stuff, but in case the guy had touched the hood, you know, because Walter's story was a little bit iffy or a little bit sketchy, I would say. And so at some point I left the detective part of it and I went and met Hunter at the hospital and he showed me the sketch and it's just like the dude described. It's this guy with the long hair. I'm actually going to look at it right now. And Patriot members are getting a video of this. But this guy just looks rough, okay? And when I mean rough, I mean he looks from the sketch. You know what? I'll never understand how these sketch artists do what they do. It trips me out. Every time I've ever used one, they can sit down with a victim of a crime and they'll ask them questions and they start doing it and they'll ask them more questions and they make adjustments. And it just absolutely blows my mind. I can't draw for shit. And to watch these sketch artists go off of a victim's memory and present something that actually turns out to be spot on. And it's just amazing. So the only time I've ever had trouble with sketch artists is when the victim was lying about who it was that did the crime. So that's trip me out. So I'm looking at it and then this sketch is amazing. Even the hair detail, like how it's scraggly and the eyes were really amazing. The mustache, just tripped me out. The nose, I mean, how they're able to pull this information out of somebody who has a knife sticking out of his stomach and could die is way the hell beyond me. So we get the sketch, and I said, well, I said, Hunter, we got to get this to the news stations. We'll get some units to take it to every station. We also need to get it out to all the uniform patrol guys and see if anybody recognizes him. But it was so much going on, y'all. This wasn't happening instantly, but the most important thing was to get to the news station so they could start running the sketch in the morning. And so that was done. I actually took it to WBRZ Channel 2 myself, and I think Hunter sent somebody to WFB and NBC. But now it's daylight, and you know, the sketch comes out and on the morning news, and of course it's the lead story on the morning news. It's the lead story on the noon news and coming evening news, and then the whole day goes by. We're working, no sleep, but everybody says, and Stan Carpenter and all of them say, oh, it's got to be a New Orleans evacuee that did this. And you know, this didn't really sit well with me. You know, I wasn't buying that, but I didn't know what else to think, and I was exhausted. And I remember going to my office and that night, and praying nobody would call, nobody would kill somebody else or whatever. I just remember being so tired, and I put my feet up on the desk and said, I'm going to nap for just a few minutes. Now, when I do this, and it holds true to this day, that I do my absolute best thinking at like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning when I'm in a semi-conscious state. And it's just, that's when my ideas come to me. I don't know how to explain it. But I had that sketch in front of me, and I was sitting there thinking, you know, that you just don't start out stabbing a cop, right? And I'm thinking about all these thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of people we had extra in the parish from New Orleans, that all the evacuees and stuff. And they had some evacuee shelters that weren't that far from Carroll Road. But remember, Carroll Road is north of 190, and it's rural. You got no business. It doesn't even have a divider line down it, y'all. When I say road, it's a blacktop street, but it's a long one, a country street. So I'm sitting in the chair, and I'm laying there, and I doze off, and I remember jolting to, waking up, and I was like, holy fuck, it hit me. I said, I went back to my thought of this, you know, guy didn't just start out stabbing somebody. The first thing I did, I ran and I had an unmarked truck at the time, an extended cab F-250 diesel with a cab on and all that. I said, I drove back out to Carroll Road, and I looked at the spot, and I said, there is no effing way that somebody from New Orleans found this road. I said, it just didn't happen. And I said, it's got to be somebody local. So my next thought was, who can help me? All right. And I'm thinking, you know, if it's going to be a local, you don't just start out stabbing an assistant chief of police. Okay. Even though Walter didn't call it in, his lights were on the car. That he lights this guy up on the bridge, and he gets out with him. For whatever reason, they come to an altercation, and a guy stabs him. No, you don't do that. So my thought in my mind was, when I woke up, is this guy's got to be a frequent flyer. So then my next step is I'll haul ass to the jail. Why? And I know this time, but by this time it was really late. And let me tell you about the Livingston Parish Jail at the time. They call it the detention center now or whatever. Tony Edwards, great guy. He was the jail supervisor at the time. And Tony started his career with Livingston Parish Sheriff's Office as a reserve. He used to actually, his his sister-in-law was one of my all-time favorite dispatchers and good friends, and we hung out on our days off, and his wife, Kim, she's a real sweetheart also. And Tony was an electrician by trade and had a successful business, made great money. But Tony got the police bug. And if I could tell you that I may have rode him around once or twice with me in uniform patrol before he was a reserve deputy, then just so he could be in on the action. Because remember, I told you when I was on the street, once the call volume went down, I was out there hunting. I was getting in a foot pursuit or a vehicle pursuit or something every night. Let's just say he may have rode with me when I didn't have authorization for him to do it, and he got bit by the bug. So then he became a reserve deputy so he could ride with me, and I got to train him. And he now he's still working as an electrician. He's got a beautiful family to take care of and all that, but he was bit by the bug. He had it bad. And so he went through the reserve process. I was his field training officer, and then he decided he wanted to come law enforcement full time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
He wasn't post-certified, and that's police officer standardized training, I think what it stands for. Post-certified is when you have to go to the academy, and it was at LSU at the time. But Sheriff Graves hired him on and put him in the jail. And I told him, I said, he called me, he said, Willie offered me a position of starting the jail and said he'd get me on the road eventually. I said, dude, if you can financially afford to do it, you need to do it. Everybody started out in the jail. I didn't, but I started out in the Department of Corrections. But even Sheriff R started out in the jail when he was young. And I said, you, with your work ethic, now, Tony Sharp, and he's probably the hardest working dude you'll ever meet. And he picked up on everything so fast on the law enforcement part. I said, Tony, you are going to love working in the jail, because I think everybody should have to start out working in the jail, because you get to know the people that you're going to be dealing with when you go in uniform patrol. Tony's problem was he started out working in the jail. You know, I hate to say this, but it's kind of true. There's two kinds of people that work in the jail. The ones who are passing through, or, you know, the younger guys are trying to get through, or the guys that are trying to go post-certified. And just like I told you in my Department of Corrections stories, you have some of the worst people that work in a jail, and they don't want to do anything but draw a paycheck. They want to go sit back on their pod or their mod or whatever they call them, their cell block, and just do their 12 hours and go home. But Tony got there and he started, and I knew he would. He rose up. He made like assistant supervisor, like in no time. They moved him from the back to the front because he went in there, he busted his ass every day. And then they moved him up to booking. Now, great personality, good old country boy. And he had it. The booking officer was a big deal too. I mean, he got to see all the shit. Everybody we brought in, from the drunks to the murders to whatever, he processed them. He did it. But he did it so well, he made jail supervisor. I'm talking about like in a matter of months. And in, I don't know what the exact time frame was. It was the fastest I ever saw anybody make jail supervisor, I can tell you that. So the Livingston Parish Jail at the time, the 911 center was the same thing, but it was inside. You pull up to the jail, you had to get buzzed through the interior door, and you're looking at the control room, which is where the jail supervisor and the matron are. And the matron generally works all the keyboard stuff. But sometimes Karen Ortolano, a dream team member, she's awesome. I mean, she got stories for days about everything. So you had to get buzzed into the control room. And if you're going to our 911 where all our dispatchers were, you had to walk through the control room at the time. And then there was this inner room inside the heart of the jail where all our dispatchers were. So anyway, I go in and it's like 4 o'clock in the morning or something. I said, Tony, he said, what's up, bud? He said, what's going on? I said, look, I got something to show you. I needed you to look at it. He said, what is it? And I said, I got a sketch, the composite of the guy who stabbed Walter Daisy. And he said, well, give it to me and let me look at it. And I'm thinking, you know, if this guy's a frequent flyer, Tony's going to know him for sure, right? Because he knows, I mean, knows everybody's coming in and out. And so I gave it to him, and he looks at it for like not even 3 seconds. He looked back up. He said, "You shitting me?" I said, "No, that's it." He said, that's Stephen May. I said, "Who is Stephen May?" He said, "This motherfucker just got out, Woody, like 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago." He said, "That's Stephen May." I said, "Are you sure?" He said, "Dude, I'm telling you, this is Stephen May." He said, "Watch this." Now, the jail, they cook all their own food and stuff for the inmates and stuff to keep the cost down, I guess. But they have trustees that do it. He said, "Stephen May was my trustee. He worked in the kitchen every day." He said, "Watch this." And they serve breakfast at 6 or 7 in the morning. I don't know what time. The trustees were already up cooking all the breakfast. He went and called one of the head trustees out. He said, "Come here, man." We go in the hallway. He said, "I'm going to show you a picture, a composite of somebody. I'm not going to say anything. I just want you to tell me if you recognize him." And he gives it to the dude, and he said, "This cook, he's been here however long." And he gave it to him, you know, the trustees in this green and white striped trustee prison thing with his hairnet on. He looks at it, he said, "That's Steven." He said, "He just got out a couple weeks ago." He said, "We worked together for like 6 months. He said, every day, every single day in the kitchen." I said, "Are you sure?" He said, "I'm telling you, that's Stephen May." So I actually got I told Tony, I said, "I need a statement from him saying that he ID's this guy, Stephen May, and I'm going to go back in the control room. I'm going to go run Stephen May's date of birth and his criminal history." So I went back in. I went into the radio room. That's where they did all the criminal histories, the NCIC searches and everything else. And I gave him the name, and I got the matron, and it wasn't Karen. I forget who it was, who his matron was at the time, but it wasn't Karen. But I told her, I said, "Look up Stephen May. He was your trustee." She said, "Yeah, I knew who he was. Saw him every day." I said, "Give me his date of birth." And she did. And then I went in, I ran his criminal history, and that list was long and distinguished. It came back. His date of birth, I forget what his date of birth was, but he was 47 years old, and he had been in and out of prison his entire life. And guess what? Guess what one of his charges were for that he was out recent for? He just did 10 years for stabbing another man during a fight. Yeah, I mean, he did 10 years. He got, which would have been second degree aggravated battery. All it's the same thing as attempted murder. There was no attempted murder statute in the state of Louisiana. But Stephen May got into a fight. Walter Daisy said they got into a little fisticuffs, you know, a little tussle, and he stabbed a dude. And so a second degree aggravated battery. It's second degree battery. And in Louisiana, it's Napoleon Code of Law. It's reversed. Everywhere else, it's assault. Everywhere outside of Louisiana, assault is the unwanted touching, right? Inside the state of Louisiana, assault is a threat. Everywhere else, battery is the threat. In Louisiana, battery is the unwanted touching. So you can go from simple battery, like I slap you in the face, to second degree battery, which is if I beat your ass so bad that you lose consciousness, you have to seek medical attention, or you're in extreme pain and disfigurement. I mean, it's talking about like you knock somebody's teeth out and shit, right? Break their nose, whatever. If they have to go to the hospital, technically that's second degree battery. Aggravated second degree battery is a second degree battery with a weapon, meaning you shot someone, you stabbed them, you beat them with a pipe, whatever it may be. Stephen May's out on parole for aggravated second-degree battery. He stabbed another man during a fist fight. During a knife fight. But he is a definite frequent flyer. So it fits. I call the powers that be then. And I start calling Stan and all of them. I said, "Listen, I got it figured, Hoss. And I know who it is. I know who it is." And he said, "What do you mean?" I told him. And he was like, "God damn, man, I can't believe that, right?" I said, "Look, I'm getting statements from everybody up here that I can identify him to start building probable cause." Because, you know, Stephen May was a frequent flyer. And this is going to be, if Walter didn't die, is going to be if he dies, it's a death penalty case, and he's going to get the needle. But if he doesn't die, the very least we're going to charge him with is basically attempted first degree murder of a police officer. And so I just told him, I said, look, we got to take our time. We got to do this right and start working the system. And so, y'all, I'm going to conclude this episode of Mama Said. You got to tune in next week. This is one of those stories that can't be told in one part. You're really, really, really going to get your mind blown when you find out what happened in the investigation. So, and it's a really great story. So tune in next week and I will conclude Mama Said. That being said, a couple of announcements real quick. Courtney Coco, I know we've asked for time and we asked for this time. And at one point they told me 2 weeks. And so I asked y'all to lay off of them. I can't tell you what I know, but I can tell you that I believe there's going to be justice for Courtney real soon. And I can tell you something else. I promise you this, not tell you. I promise you, if the justice doesn't come for Courtney by like the second week of November, all you crew members, almost 27,000 now on a private Facebook page that if you're not a member, go to it. You have to be approved by our Dream Team moderators and we'll get you approved, but it's growing like 100 people every 2 days. But it's all true crime related. But everybody on there knows who Courtney Coco is. On Fridays, they post the pictures of themselves wearing pink, et cetera. And it's like, it's true crime stuff on that page also. And so our numbers on that page are important because if they don't do what they say they're going to do, we are going to burn Rapide's ass down. And we're going to do it legally. I have a plan. We're going to call all lifers to the forefront who care about justice for Courtney and we're going to implement the plan and everything will be legal, but it's going to be painful as a bitch for Rapides Parish. And there's all kinds of stuff that I'm in possession of and a plan that we're going to execute and we're going to get justice for Courtney one way or another. And I'd be real surprised if there's not some national media this week that I can't tell you about either. But so y'all just be patient. I mean, we're going to talk about a couple more weeks. I know I've said it before, but this time I'm backing it up with, I tell you, if it's not done by Thanksgiving, we will use our numbers. We'll use our strength and we will get justice for Courtney Coco. All right. We're going to make them act one way or another. And of course, y'all, it's election. Everybody get out and vote. If you early vote, I don't care who you vote for. If you early vote, whatever, I do believe that the voting is the only way to bring about a change in this country, whether it's on the local level or national level or whatever. Now, Miss Barbara Blunt's case. All right. It's being worked and I'm still getting tips. And there's a couple of y'all I haven't even called back this week or probably the last 10 days since the hurricane and all that. But I am still working it and it's being worked in a way that I haven't even told you about yet. So, but please keep sharing Miss Barbara's story. Every time you share, we get tips. And I know y'all hear me say that all the time, but I'm telling you again, if I could show you after an episode comes out and I talk about Miss Barbara Blunt, I get more tips guaranteed. So sharing equals tips. Y'all do that. I'd appreciate it. And follow me on Instagram at Real Life Real Crime and at Overton Woody. And you go follow me, take a picture of your follow and send it to me at my email, woody@reallifeforcrime.com or any of our social media pages. And there's a million of them, it seems like. You send that to me. Every 50 of y'all that follow me on both of those and send it to me, I will enter your name, 1 through 50, into a drawing for either a signed autographed copy of my book, Jesus Held Me, or a Real Life Real Crime face mask, and they're nice, y'all. They're cloth and washable and reusable and all that, or one of our nice window decals. And I just did the drawing this past Monday and posted it in the crew page for the first four winners. So the first 200 that did it, and we have plenty more. So if I didn't read your name out in one of the drawings, don't worry about it. I'm going to do a couple a week. So y'all, Instagram is just another platform that we're growing. YouTube, go watch Rapids Burning on YouTube. We made it. We've purchased a new computer, video editing equipment, et cetera, and we made those episodes like more like a movie. As I'm talking, you get the podcast, but then you get to see the people and the places and the bad guys and girls and the attorneys and the whatever, the district attorney, et cetera. Really interesting. And for people like me that are more visual, or who don't know what a podcast, like me, didn't even, you know, don't even know what a podcast is or didn't a year and a half ago. I think it's more interesting for them, and it just helps us grow. And the more we grow, the better it is for everybody. All right. And so, go check it out. We're going to be backdating episodes. My wife's going to be going in and adding videos, and these videos, y'all, the Rapids Burning series on the podcast, they actually have news clips in them, news interviews, and all these different things. It's a production. So if you get a chance, watch it. We're going to go back and do all the episodes, but Rome wasn't built in a day. And like I'm videoing this one now, it's so my wife can go back in and add stories, stuff to this. And so y'all check it out. It's Real Life Real Crime Podcast, not just Real Life Real Crime. You search YouTube for Real Life Real Crime Podcast. Every episode I've ever done, I think, is up there, whether it has the video attached to it or not. And there's a lot of other stuff, like me doing crawfish bowls and fish fries and hanging out, drinking beer and answering questions from lifers and stuff like that. And I'm going to start doing some lives from YouTube also. So y'all check that out. Subscribe to it. That way, every time I post something new in there, you'll get an alert. And when you get time, you can go check it out. I guess that's about it. I'm going to thank y'all. And listen, I hate to make it a cliffhanger on Mama Said, but it's that kind of story. You got to tune in next week to hear when sugar turns to shit and shit starts to roll downhill and stuff. But it's a hell of a good case. Anyway, so LOPA, Louisiana Organ Procurement Agency, that's my people. Please go to LOPA.org. Sign up to be an organ donor. You're not going to care. You're going to be dead. 98% of the people like me, I'm an organ donor. I'm not going to use my old ass organs, right? But 98% of the people don't even qualify at the time of their deaths for their organs to be donated. So please go to LOPA.org. Look under Livingston Parish Literacy and Technology Center Criminal Justice students and tell them that's how you heard about them, because that's how I heard about it, or I'd heard about it, but that's how I really got to know them. But they also, so check that box, and also Lopez put a box for Real Life Real Crime, so you can check that also if you want to. I mean, that's kind of cool to get to see some results, but I'd rather those kids get the from Livingston Parish Literacy and Technology Center get the credit first. And that's Kelly Jennings, the teacher, Ms. Kim Albin, the principal, and then the representative for Southeastern Louisiana University. And y'all, I've been remiss in not mentioning her, is Ms. Crystal Hardison. She has like a three-namer in it. Crystal, I'm sorry I'm messing your name up. But she's also is one of the ones that brought me into the Livingston Parish Literacy and Technology Center and took me under their wing. So all great ladies. Great programs they have going out there. LOPA, be a hero. Sign up, be an organ donor. Save lives. There are people that are waiting on your organs right now. And also, they do, and we're going to get more into it in a future episode, but they're doing all kinds of incredible things. So it's a nonprofit agency. They're not making any money, but they are saving lives. So be a hero, save a life. I'm Woody Overton, your host of Real Life, Real Crime, the podcast. Until next time or ever, don't let me catch you down on murder. Bye. Peace.
Get ready, you're gonna do time. Real life, real crime.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.